Welcome to the Frederick Faith Debate on Frederick's News Radio 930 WFMD, brought to you by AllShred Mobile Document Destruction. AllShred, they sell security. I'm your host and moderator, Troy Skinner. Again, reminding you, the Frederick Faith Debate is designed to be an open and honest forum for our local faith community leaders to share and discuss their views of the truth. Thomas Jefferson once said, "The clash of ideas is the sound of freedom." In that spirit, we will seriously wrestle with the important important ideas. Having a hard time speaking this morning. And might even disagree with one another during the course of the show. The hope is that through our wrestling, you will develop a better understanding of the truth about the most important issues that face us in this world. And this week, we will pick up where we left off last week and talk about evangelism. And here to talk about that subject again are John Schweitzer from Crossroad Valley Chapel in Frederick and Conrad Link, the pastor of Brook Hill United Methodist Church here in Frederick as well.
You know, Troy, I got to say that with George Bush's speech just this last week and his emphasis on liberty, that, you know, the fact that we can in this nation debate these kinds of things in a healthy way, I just feel like it is at the core of who we are as a nation. And there's just something to me, there's something, how do I say it? It's deep in my soul. It's something that I saw in The Chosen. You seen the movie The Chosen, Conrad?
No, I haven't.
Reverend Link. In the Jewish community, they love to debate. And they love to have those discussions that are gut level. You go head to head. You disagree with each other, even red-faced disagreements with one another, and then get up, shake hands, and say, "Man, let's do this again tomorrow." You know, there's that deep sense of caring enough about the issues of life, you know, that we'll actually talk on these levels to know one another deeply, and yet refusing to allow those things to cause us to be hateful or intolerant of one another, and. Again, with liberty and you know, just George Bush's whole speech, I just feel like, you know, that is what our nation's all about.
Well, to that I say, hooah!
Hooah! Welcome. Wake up, everybody. Yeah. It's time to get out of bed.
All right. Evangelism. if you were listening last week, you heard as we were coming towards the end of the show, we started talking about the idea of who it's appropriate to target for evangelism.
Yeah.
And if we should be targeting people at all.
Yeah.
So I'm going to... last week I think I threw the first question to John. This week I'll throw the first question. Is it okay if I call you by first names, by the way? It's kind of informal. Is that all right?
It's your show.
Wow.
There it is.
I've got the anointing.
Everybody will always know.
Well then, Conrad.
Okay.
You, in the last show, I'm trying to remember. Not a good idea, in your view, for Protestant denominations to go after and evangelize Roman Catholics, for example. And you specifically seem to be strongly in favor of evangelism efforts and trying to evangelize those who have no faith whatsoever.
Sure.
Is there an area in between Roman Catholicism and no faith in whatsoever? Is it appropriate for a Christian to evangelize a Muslim, a Jew, a Hindu, a Buddhist?
Well, one of the things that comes from Jonathan's remarks about liberty is the word respect.
Yeah.
And I feel very strongly about the fact that the Christian community needs to respect itself in order for it then to respect other people. And one of the things that happens when we don't respect ourselves within the Christian community and we see ourselves as Roman Catholic or Baptist or Presbyterian or fundamentalist or charismatic or evangelical, whatever, is that we put all these labels on ourselves and we forget the fact that we're supposed to be Christian.
Hmm.
And I tend to want to see what we hold in common, not what we hold different. I want to emphasize the fact that if we all been baptized and we all been call ourselves Christian, then that's where we start. That's why the Hebrew community in your earlier remarks could talk about the fact that they can argue with each other and be frustrated with each other because they know that they're brothers.
Yeah.
And what we really need in the Christian community is recognize that we have these different labels.
Yeah.
And I appreciate that because each label has a unique aspect of tradition and history and focus and even modern contemporary. But we need to start where we are. Therefore, I would say that if I have X number of minutes to share the gospel, I want to share it with somebody who's never heard it before versus somebody who's heard it but maybe heard it in a different tradition or celebrates it. And that's where I would start.
Now, before I give John a chance to respond to that and share his view on that question that I've asked, there are some sects, maybe slash denominations out there that would call themselves Christians that most mainstream Christians wouldn't recognize as Christians.
Probably true.
Are the rules a little bit rules? Maybe not the right word.
Good
but
point.
Is
how do we define who is and who is not?
I suspect the approach is different, but that you're talking about some complicated questions. How many of these questions you want to cover at 6 o'clock in the morning?
Yeah. Well, and that's what we've noticed in general with this show is that these more relevant issues like evangelism tend to be tied to some pretty complex theological ideas that are important and valuable. And I think the average person really is interested in, you know, hearing where some of those things come from. So, but
what's your response to Pastor Link's response to the first question of is it appropriate to target specific groups and how do we begin to try to identify who those groups are?
I think there is a need to define who is and who is not a Christian, and once you come up with a definition, whatever it is, the fact of the matter is different parts of the body of Christ will define those slightly differently. But once you define who that is, what you know, who's in, if you will, and who is still in need of the gospel, who's still in need of hearing the truth and coming to understand the truth, once you define that, then at that point evangelism is basically doing what you said previously, finding those that are not and reaching out to them. And I think this is why I'm willing to go to the definition of what is a Christian and what is not, because for the Southern Baptist, if you believe, as the Catholics believe, I don't even know if I can say it well, but a classic Southern Baptist is going to believe that Catholics are trying to earn their way to heaven. And right. As a result of that definition, they see Catholics as being outside of salvation. And so for them to target a community that would believe that way, they give themselves permission to based upon their definition.
What do you say to that?
Well,
I think this is a dangerous topic.
I know. Very dangerous. And yet,
first
it's at
all,
the crux of what we all believe.
The irony of it is, who sets the definition?
Yeah.
And I think our task is to talk about evangelism, but I don't think a Southern Baptist gets to determine or define what it means to be a Christian or a Catholic. I don't think a Presbyterian needs to define the definition of a Christian for a fundamentalist. I mean, the Bible has some basic, simple things. As far as what Christian is, I would like to think we could find some common ground and then go from there. But, I mean, if the issue is going to be evangelism, why would – I mean, for example, here in Frederick, let's say there's 40,000 people in Frederick.
Yeah.
Okay? So there's 40,000 people. And let's say that 10,000 of the people in Frederick go to church. And let's say you're coming into the community and you're going to open up and start your new church.
Yeah.
What group are you going to go to?
Yeah.
Well, you know, the people that are going to be the most receptive to you inevitably will be people that know your language, which is the 10,000.
Sure.
So all of a sudden we have all these churches around and we start borrowing each other's members. And
yep.
Meanwhile, the 30,000 that needs the message, or if we have something of value, hopefully,
yep.
that we would want to share with them, nobody pays attention to.
Yeah.
I mean, evangelism to me is finding the person that's hungry. Who knows they're hungry but doesn't know how to find the place they're going to be satisfied, and sharing with them the bread.
Now, let me ask you a question. You've already probably answered it. You're clearly uncomfortable defining or giving a definition for who biblically is quote-unquote saved, like who biblically has come to a place where they can be assured of their salvation. They'll be assured of heaven for eternity. And
no, not necessarily. I'm just trying to stay within the topic of evangelism.
And my point is that I'm convinced that churches in a community that couple basics. Believe that Jesus Christ is the Son of God, is God. Believe that he was born of the Virgin Mary. Believe that he died to pay the price so that our sins would be forgiven. And if we believe in him, believe in our heart and confess with our mouth that we will be saved. There's a proof of that salvation through levels of transformation, meaning that it leads to a transformed life, more giving, more caring, more sharing, that those churches that are of that opinion, because I think that there are some churches who don't necessarily believe that Christ is the only way to heaven, but I believe that those churches that do believe that should work together and even do, if it were like Easter service together, or do a big Christmas thing together, find ways to work together and even to strategize about how to outreach. If I'm going to shoot straight with you, I believe that those guys should work together. And if they would, that we would see way more effectiveness for the sake of the gospel. In fact, Billy Graham says that when he finally began to work with Catholic churches in the cities where he worked, that his attendance at his rallies just went through the roof.
Sure.
Because he was able to find a definition of salvation that allowed him to work together with those guys for the sake of the gospel so that they're not stealing from one another, but they're working together. And what happens is, the phrase that I've heard is that the tide rises, the spiritual tide in the community rises.
Well, I think that was a learning point for Billy Graham, too, because he did what you had alluded to earlier in one of your previous program illustrations.
Yeah.
He went to the people into the community who represented the people of faith.
Yeah.
He learned. It wasn't so much that that particular case, Roman Catholics, told him something that they hadn't already been told.
Amen.
He went and he learned and he understood their language.
Yeah.
Your little definition right there, that's pure, solid faith. I don't have any argument with your statements.
Cool,
and
I'm
you
with
know
you.
What?
Yeah.
Neither with the Roman Catholic or the Presbyterian or anybody. Those are solid pieces. Those are solid pieces of faith. We agree.
Okay, now.
Those are fine.
Let's say that
by the way, before we move on, I agree too, except unless I misheard it, and I think you accidentally left out one other key piece, and that is belief in the resurrection.
Amen. Absolutely.
Right.
I think that's very
important.
Well,
that's there. Yeah. That's there.
Yeah. I mean, that's on that list.
And good. Definitely.
Sure. I just wanted to make sure.
Now, let me ask this question.
It would be nice if we could just agree on five or six things and leave that. And okay, fine. Or check off. You want to do it your thing. You want to sing more. You want to pray more. That's okay.
But, yeah.
Okay.
Let's take your community that is considered a Catholic community. You know, maybe in that community there's some 5 to 10,000 people that live in that community who are at some level saved or not saved. Now, say you and I, you're a Methodist and I'm non-denominational. Say you and I decide that we're going to do a church plant, and for whatever reason we feel like, you know, you're going to do a Methodist one in that community, I'm going to do a non-denominational one in that community. Mm-hmm. If we were to go into that community and talk with the priests that are Christ-centered, that are faith-oriented,
sure,
that are, you know, believers according to, you know, this definition of salvation, and say, look, I feel like God's called me to this community, and I just wanted to let you know that I'm not here to work against you, but I want to throw my shoulder to the plow along with you in this community. In fact, I preach this in my church all the time on Sunday mornings, that you know what, we are merely one of the many things that God is doing in this community. And if we ever start thinking that we're the only thing, then we're gonna limit our effectiveness
for
the sake of the
gospel.
That's
a good message.
And so my point being is that I think it's possible that there are Methodist communities in the nation, or Catholic communities, or non-denominational communities in the nation that are not being reached well for the gospel, and they're not passing their faith on well. And so even though they've got this reputation for being a Methodist community or a Catholic community, it would still be very valuable for other communities to come in and to bear that weight with them to for the sake of the gospel. And so clearly you threw out a specific scenario, but the question comes down to, one, I agree that we need to pull together, and people that are committed to that need to find ways to pull together. Two, I think we need to be very clear, at least from a Christian perspective, on what our definition of salvation is, so that, because I think it's possible that you could pull into that kind of thing churches that really aren't committed to those things, and that ultimately could end up leading
and
them
there,
astray.
There again takes us to a whole other topic about the issue of salvation and what that defines.
Yeah.
And that can be explored whether it's mainline traditional Christian or fringe Christians or fundamentalists or new or however you want to define that. But it would seem to me that one of the things that challenges somebody when they're going to go and evangelize in a community is what attitude do you have towards the people that you're going up and knocking on their door, ringing their bell, or meeting them?
Yeah.
And if you go with the attitude that even before I know your name, you're wrong, is a lousy way to present the gospel.
Yeah.
And you go and you meet people where they are and hear from them, and you find somebody that's a regular attender, they've been going to that church.
Yeah.
Okay, maybe they don't speak the same kind of salvation language that somebody else does, but you can see in their lives and their heart that they're trying to do the best they can, then your word is a word of grace. Welcome you. Continue your journey of faith, and God bless you.
In fact, I've pitched a couple families as I've done some door-to-door stuff in the direction of Peter Kemeny, a Presbyterian minister in town, and in the direction of Matt Poole with his Methodist congregation there in, I forget where it is now.
Faith Point in Urbana?
Urbana, thank you.
Yeah.
And I think that's what you're referring to. The point
there's a perfect evangelist, one who's simply offering the bread and inviting people to various places to find it.
Yeah. Now, should we go there? Are we willing then to, or should we, and this is the other part of your question, or I guess I took it this direction, should we target a Jewish community or should we target a Islamic community? And if so, what's going to be the best way to target those communities?
Before we jump into that, I want to reset real quickly for those who are just joining us. This is the Frederick Faith Debate on Frederick's News Radio 930 WFMD. I'm Troy Skinner. Our panelists this week are Conrad Link, who is the pastor of Brook Hill United Methodist Church in Frederick, and Jonathan Schweitzer, who's the pastor of Crossroads Valley Chapel here in Frederick as well. We're talking about evangelism, and it happens every time. You bring up a particular issue, and it's like a web,
explodes,
and everything starts to get connected, and you struggle to get to stay on course. I wanted to throw out a thought that occurred to me. Those who know me off the air know that I'm in the sales arm of this radio station.
Sure.
And there's a secular example of what you're talking about, really the definitive difference between sales and marketing.
Hmm.
Okay? Sales is trying to convince somebody that they need what you have.
And to buy it now.
And and marketing is convincing them that you have what they need. And I think that what Pastor Link is talking about is more of a marketing approach.
Okay.
Find out what their needs are, and then you can offer them, you can say, you know what? You're really hungry, and I've got this bread.
Yeah.
Instead of going up to them with the bread and beating them over the head and say, you are hungry, whether you realize it or not, and I'm going to keep beating you until you realize it. So I think that there's a lot of validity in that, and I would agree that that's probably the more – most people are responsive to that sort of approach than being beat over the head with something, for sure.
In fact, I could tell you this, that all of the door-to-door stuff that I've done in this community – my wife actually did – for a while, welcome to the neighborhood kind of a business, you know, with advertisers. And then I would follow up and go to those houses and just say, hey, I'm a pastor in the community. And I would tell them, look, I don't know what you're looking for in a church, but if you'll tell me, I bet I could help you to find the right place. And hoping that there would be some as well, you know, that would come and join us, but specifically thinking to myself that, you know what, the best thing to do is to encourage an atmosphere that helps people to get back into church, you know, pursuing the Lord, and that in so doing, in fact, I'd even say that this radio program is along those lines too, that the best thing to do is for people to be spiritually minded. And the way to help people to be spiritually minded and be thinking about spiritual things is to create an atmosphere where people are saying, well, wait a second, this is what I believe about this, you know, where people can talk about it. And I've been concerned at times that the tolerance mentality, at least in the businesses where I've worked, has created a fear of talking about anything religious. And instead of creating a respect for one another's religions, it's created a, well, that's what you believe, and I don't know if I believe that, but, you know, we probably better not talk about it because, you know, that's not good to do. And it's been a big concern of mine because I think that creates an environment where people are afraid to really grapple with those issues and know one another spiritually as well as socially and as well as, you know, professionally. And if we can't know each other spiritually, then, you know, then the whole spiritual atmosphere suffers. And that's what I'm trying to get at, is how can we encourage a spiritual atmosphere so that people are making decisions to clutch in. You know, they're not just staying in neutral, but they're going into first gear, or they're hitting reverse, or they're, you know, saying, hey, I need to go somewhere. I'm seeking for some answers, and I want answers. And it seems to me that an atmosphere that does that is just a very healthy thing in a community.
And you're I think, referring to Troy's original remark when he opens the show about Thomas Jefferson, quote, about tolerance.
The class of ideas.
And we need to be aware of tolerance. And one of the things that, respect. Again, that's another topic of conversation,
yeah.
is that maybe one of the things you're pointing out is the fact that maybe we don't listen to each other very well, and we don't tolerate, and we're always looking to how we're different instead of how we're the same.
What is we've alluded to this, but we haven't really dived into it just yet, and we have about 5 minutes left, so maybe we can try to talk about this in the remaining portions of the show. What is the ultimate end goal of evangelism?
To bring people to Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
To help them know the love of God for their lives.
I'd say to know the love of God and to allow then God's love to transform them, that the end goal is some level of them allowing God to change them to be more like Christ.
So correct me if I'm wrong, because I would agree with that. That would be my definition
good.
And my purpose for evangelism
I like
as well.
I like agreement. That's you know, good.
So in with that being the goal, that's where we're trying to go,
yeah.
it seems appropriate that you would try to evangelize Muslims and Jews and Hindus and Buddhists, right? And maybe even and target them, not specifically necessarily, but target them as part of all of those who don't know Christ, because you're targeting every individual who doesn't know Christ.
Well, and this is part of the reason why I would have really liked to have somebody on the show today that is not a Christian, because I think that this kind of a discussion is very healthy, especially with those that are not Christian and would be opposed to evangelism, you know, just outright, whose religions, you know, wouldn't even follow
that way. And for those who might
be
wondering, we had someone scheduled to be on who was not a Christian pastor.
But I'll take a little bit.
He was unable to make it for reasons that we're not sure. We hope that he's okay.
Yeah.
I'll take
yeah.
a little bit more liberal point of view, though. Maybe this
Good.
Is what
okay.
you'd like for a moment.
Okay.
is that I don't think that the first audience that a Christian would want to go to would be our Hebrew brothers and sisters. I refer to them as our Hebrew brothers and sisters. They're part of the Hebrew text we call the Old Testament text.
Yeah.
They're part of our history.
And apparently we're grafted into their tree.
That's fine. And I don't think that our first audience needs to be the faithful Muslim community either. They are supposed to, from their own rituals and all their literature, to respect the people of the book. That's their reference, the people of the book. Christians and Jews are people of the book. If we find people who are faithful to their tradition, faithful, I think we're going to find that we are brothers and sisters. They might not worship Jesus. They might not have that understanding. But I like to think that there are probably other people in the world that have no concept of God at all. And that should be our first place to start.
Okay,
so
John?
I think my response to that would be that that your definition,
my definition focuses mostly on the love of God.
On the love of God. So
yeah.
your
As
definition
a Christian,
of salvation,
I know it through Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
But for the love of God.
Yeah.
I'm talking about evangelism now.
Right. Right. Definitely, you're talking about evangelism. But again, your definition of salvation, like I was saying earlier, defines for you then who's appropriate to reach out to and who's not. And I think what I hear you saying is that your definition of salvation is less emphasizes Christ, although for you, Christ is that.
Yes.
But it more emphasizes the love of God, which you would believe can be experienced as a Buddhist or as a Hindu or as an Islam.
We're not talking about that. We're talking about evangelism, and the place I said we wouldn't start would be with the Hebrew community or the Islamic community. If they are faithful to their tradition, they are going to be the love of God. And I think that we would find that in common.
Yeah, and I guess I would say that I disagree with that because I guess my understanding, again, of what the Bible teaches is that you know, Christ said, I'm the way, the truth, and the life, that no man comes to the Father but by me.
Sure. I remember the centurion who had a servant that was ill. A centurion was a pagan.
Good. Yeah.
And he goes and he sends to Jesus, and Jesus comes and, you know, asks for authority for the healing of his servant. And Jesus admires the faith of this pagan Roman centurion. And before the pagan Roman gets home, the servant is healed.
Yeah.
That's because the faith, the faithfulness, the respect of humanity that was seen by Jesus in that person who was not Jewish,
sure,
certainly wasn't Christian,
right,
was appropriate. And that person, I believe, was offered a gift of grace, of healing, and of salvation.
And the salvation came. So anyways, my point is I think you and I agree that I would say that the salvation came as a result of his meeting Christ. I would say that I think it's very possible that any person that's truly seeking the love of God is going to find Christ ultimately. And so my speaking with that individual about Christ is only going to it's going to lead him where I already wanted to go anyway. So anyways, there's probably a disagreement there, and cool, I'm with that.
Well, as usual, we've solved all the world's ills in 27 minutes or less.
Created more.
Come back again next week to solve your problems again.
Thank you so much for listening to this week's edition of the Frederick Faith Debate on Frederick's News Radio 930 WFMD. We'll be back again next week. Subject to be determined. Yeah, we've got 7 days to think about it, I guess. If you're a local faith community leader or know one who would like to participate in a future roundtable, please contact me, Troy Skinner, at the offices of WFMD. Also, if you have a topic you'd like to hear discussed, please share that as well. My email address is troyskinner@clearchannel.com. And if you don't have email and you want to call, you can, 301-663-4181. Just ask for me, Troy Skinner. Thanks again for listening, and God bless.